This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Confessions of a Debut Novelist, with me, your host, Chloe Timms. This week, I'm talking to Madeline Gray about her literary novel, Green Dot. Madeline is a writer and highly commended critic from Sydney. She has written for The Times, The Guardian, the BBC, and many other publications. She has a Master's in English from the University of Oxford, and is studying for a PhD at the University of Manchester. In this episode, we discuss writing the other woman in an affair with empathy, how Madeline's work as a critic gave her an understanding of how novels work, and the importance of keeping note of overheard conversations and funny observations. Just a bit of a heads up, some of the sound in this episode is a little bit quiet. That's because Maddie had just got off a plane from Sydney, and we were trying to squeeze in a recording before she had a very busy tour. So Maddie was speaking to me from a very busy street in London, and we were so desperate to have this conversation because Maddie's got such an interesting story to tell, and Green Dot is a fabulous debut for 2024. But before we hear Maddie talk, let's hear an excerpt from Green Dot.
For some years of my 20s, I was very much in love with a man who would not leave his wife. For not one moment of this relationship was I unaware of what every single popular culture representation of such an arrangement portended my fate to be. Having done well in school, but having found little scope in which to win things since then, it is possible that my dedication to this relationship was in fact a dedication to my belief in myself, that I could make a man love me so much that he would leave what he had always known, all his so-called responsibilities, purely to attain my company forever. I offered nothing but myself, you see. I was not rich. I had no assets or important connections. I did not have children or things that tied me to anywhere, really. Whereas he had all of these things, so settled into the couch of his life and just approaching middle age. I craved the stability he seemed to exude. I was intoxicated by the promise of ordinary happiness implied by his cargo shorts, by his chemist-bought sunglasses. I was besotted with the way he combined a high-powered job with the nervous shyness of someone who was bullied in primary school and has since taken on knowing timidity as an endearing personality trait. My God, how I wanted him. And I just knew that if I did enough, put in enough energy, waited long enough, was understanding enough, kind enough, funny enough, horny enough, accommodating enough, I could have him. And then I could have a life which didn't require me to make decisions anymore. I would just adjust myself to snuggle in with him, into his life couch. No more anxiety about what to do or who to see or how to spend my evenings. I would be his, and that would be enough, and I could rest.
Hi, Maddie. Welcome to the podcast. I'm really excited to have you on with me today to discuss your debut novel, Green Dot.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be talking to you. I've just got off a 24-hour plane from Sydney and I'm hurriedly running around London, and to talk to you is a treat. So thank you very much.
Lovely. Can you start by telling us what Green Dot is about?
Yeah. So the short elevator pitch I've now developed is that it's a doomed love affair from the perspective of the other woman. But A Little Longer is basically, it's about 24-year-old Hera, who has a few arts degrees and is pretty unsure of what to do with her life and doesn't like the idea of having a job, really, but a career. She finds that idea stifling. So she, as she has no money, she does have to get a job. And she gets a job as a comment moderator at a news website. And essentially, sometimes when you're in very boring spaces, you latch on to anything that might give your life meaning. And Hera finds that in 40-year-old Arthur, who is her work senior. And she begins a kind of all-consuming love affair with him. The only catch is he is unfortunately married. And then the kind of book develops into a tale of obsession from one woman, and we see how far she'll go to try and get the love she wants.
I just got totally addicted to this novel, like trying to work out what was going to happen. And we kind of know that it's doomed because, of course, Hera tells us basically that she's made this terrible mistake. And I love the way you had this voice that speaks to the reader. I wondered whether that was something you decided straight away, or did you play with kind of perspective and point of view as you were writing?
Yeah, well, I knew it had to be from the first person because it's quite a solipsistic novel. It's all from one woman's perspective. And I knew that if we got the insight of other characters, then we might kind of become aware of the amount of cognitive dissonance that Hera is engaging with. And so to really commit to her point of view, which is quite warped at times, you had to just be stuck inside her head. And I didn't know how far I was going to break the fourth wall when I began, but it kind of became quite natural. It's kind of like diaristic, and Hera's speaking to you from at a stage in her life where she's no longer in this affair. And so I wanted to her to have a kind of wry looking back and saying, I'm aware this is the point that I should have done something differently. I know that you think this is stupid. I too know it's stupid, but I did it anyway. And it's kind of, I wanted that kind of conversation with the reader to be organic and fun, and so to develop a repartee between protagonist and reader. Yeah.
I wondered if you could give us an insight to where this book began and whether, I guess, what point you knew you had something special.
Gosh, it began because I also work as a literary critic as well as a writer of fiction. And I'd been reviewing and reading a lot of affair novels for a long time. I'm not trying to suggest that my book is the only affair novel that exists. It is a very old narrative. But what I was really interested in all these books was this trope of the older man and the younger woman. And I wanted to tease out why a young woman in the 21st century who ostensibly could choose any path, she's educated, she lives in a city where like there aren't, you know, huge barriers to a white woman's success, let's be real. So I wanted to see why she, of all people, would decide to go down this normative path of falling for a boring old white guy. That seems like a really strange decision to make. And I guess I knew that the story is compelling. I think affair novels are always compelling. But what I wanted to make different about it was I don't see that many novels that are from the perspective of the other woman. Usually it's from the perspective of the woman whose husband is cheating on her or partner. And I wanted to, yeah, just extend empathy and really get into the head of someone we might have a knee-jerk moral reaction to. And I mean, in answer to your question, when did I know I was onto something? I don't really know if I ever knew I was onto something. I was interested in it, and I just wrote it myself, and I didn't show it to anyone the whole time I was writing it. And then after about a year, I thought I reckon it's done. So I just sent it to an agent who I'd never met and was like, is this anything? And luckily she was like, yeah, this is something. So that was helpful.
Oh, wow. So your kind of agent experience was literally send it out. And was that an agent then that you got representation from?
Yeah, yeah. Grace Hyphen. She's amazing. She's Australian. But at the time I emailed her, she was in London for the London Book Fair. And it was really, I'm aware that it's a wild tale that does not happen to debut novelists. So I get that it's not comments. I'm very grateful, but she was like, "I love this. Can I just like shop it around at the London Book Fair? I'm here right now." And I was like, "Yes, please do that." And then she did that, and then like 3 days later, I had my first book deal, which was with Whittingfield and Nicholson in the UK.
Wow, that is fantastic. I mean, perfect timing as well. Did you know London Book Fair was going on? Had you any awareness of this?
No, not at all. I had no idea it was going on. It was totally random and just one of those instances where like things come together in a magical way. But yeah, a stroke of luck, definitely.
Amazing. Had you tried to write a novel before? Obviously, you're a writer anyway, and I know you've done a master's and a PhD, but had you kind of attempted a novel and abandoned it, or was this literally your first ever try?
I'd written like maybe one or two short stories when I was at uni. But I just kind of felt earlier on, I don't know, I felt like to have a novel, you probably need to have a story that is interesting to other people. And I honestly didn't feel like I had that narrative in my head until the idea for this book kind of germinated. So I hadn't ever tried to write a novel before, but I'd spent 10 years criticizing in a positive way, not being negatively criticizing, but thinking about other novelists and their books for so long that I think that was like my education in novel writing. And then, yeah, I just kind of did it.
I saw an interview with you where you said that your master's and your PhD were kind of preparing you for this. I wondered whether the novel was almost like a cathartic release, a kind of way of playing with the information that you'd learned, but in a way, you know, rather than doing it in an academic way.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, my master's was about, like, what was the term? It sounds really wanky. It was like erotic neoliberal women's friendships or something like that. But it was looking at like Sally Rooney, Deborah Levy, and Ali Smith. And so I've been thinking about, you know, how can women be happy in late capitalism, but in really academic terms that I really wouldn't want anyone I like to have to read because it's so dense. And then the PhD was in, which I literally just handed in, so I'm like feeling a lot of relief. It was in autobiographical women's literary theory, so again, very dense stuff. But still thinking about, you know, feminism and white feminism and how is kind of white feminism co-opting ideas of, you know, anti-neoliberal struggle and all this kind of stuff. And this novel was a way for me to, yeah, channel all of that information into something that was hopefully readable and fun and compelling and didn't use the word hermeneutics every 2 sentences. Yeah.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
One thing that kind of surprised me in the novel, and I don't know why it surprised me, but you touch on the pandemic and living through the pandemic. And I think there's a kind of a weird thing where for a long time, people were afraid to touch it and afraid to write about it. And especially because people were afraid of their book being termed as a pandemic novel. Were you kind of apprehensive to write about it? Or had you always planned to include it?
Well, I mean, obviously I couldn't have planned to include it before the pandemic, because I am unfortunately not someone who can tell the future. But I was wary of putting in the pandemic because I didn't want it to be labelled as a pandemic. In the case of this story, it just seemed to work really well to my mind, because the isolation that one experiences in lockdown is terrible at any point. Especially if you're in a love affair and you're trapped on the other side of the world from the person that you love, and you have no support and no network, it just seems like, wow, this is how it would really maximize all the terrible, terrible feelings that are happening. So it just seemed to work for the story, which is a boring answer maybe, but it worked. Yeah.
No, I totally understand that. I wondered, kind of on that note of obviously planning. Did you have a kind of general sense of what was going to happen in the book? Like, did you have kind of like, this is going to happen, like various events, or are you kind of more of a write to see what's going to happen kind of person?
Yeah, I'm definitely more of a write to see what's going to happen. But that being said, I knew how I wanted it to end. So I wrote the final scenes first. I knew that that's it had to end, and then it was essentially me working out from there, and like, how would someone get to this point? So like a pantser, to use that term, but in reverse.
I know a lot of people that write at the end first, so you're not alone on that one.
Yeah.
Your book is just so funny, and just such a wry, like you said, the wryness of her voice is just fantastic, and all these like observations about the world and about life, and particularly in such a kind of monotonous job. I wondered whether you're the sort of person that kind of collects these little nuggets and writes them down. Are you someone that's always like got notes on your phone with loads of observations on?
Absolutely, yeah. You've picked me, you've seen me and read me very much there. My notes now is all just like overheard conversations and like funny little nuggets. There's even like when I was doing the edits on the book, I think it was a Chinese dumpling noodle house in Sydney, and I overheard these two gay men just having the funniest conversation about like people who, I think it was like people who love Disney, and he was like, I don't love Disney, I grew up with domestic abuse, or some line that was just so funny. And in the edits, I was like, I'm putting it in, it's going in. So I hope they read the book, because I just stole their conversation.
Can you imagine if they pick up the book and see it and they're like, wait a minute, that was what I said.
I should give them, yeah, some credit, but unfortunately they're strangers. But if they get in contact, be sure to give them royalties if they ever come.
You mentioned earlier, which I thought was really interesting, about you wanted to write a book where readers would empathise with the other woman. And I guess there will be people that read it that obviously will dislike her, just because she's slept with a married man, and obviously to the extent of where the book goes, I don't want to give it away. How do you feel about this whole like kind of empathetic, like likable character thing? Because there are a lot of people that just particularly just are like, I don't like this character, so I don't like this book. How do you feel about kind of writing, I suppose, unlikable characters?
I mean, I think it's becoming such a trope now, which I don't think is fair, the unlikable messy woman. And I think that labeling of a woman who isn't likable is a kind of reductive and pretty sexist way to deal with things. But I love the idea of writing someone that you don't necessarily like. I think that's the joy of fiction and making stuff up, that you can inhabit the head of someone that you wouldn't normally try to understand. But it has been funny in terms of, I don't think I predicted how many major moral reactions there would be to having a protagonist who is, you know, quote unquote, an adulteress. The responses from people, like especially on like forums like Goodreads, where people really are not shy or not backwards and coming forwards. Some people have been like, I would never read sentenced by this repugnant character, like, you know, women who cheat are the worst people in the world, etc. And then I'm obviously not contributing to this forum because that would be very unfortunate. I'm always waiting for someone to come in and like speak in my defense. And, you know, occasionally they do, and they'll be like, novels are not for relatability, you know, they're for understanding a character. So if she irks you this much, that's probably a good thing. So I want to give those comments a thumbs up. But yeah, I just like, if that's, and I feel like that's applied more to women, because I mean, no one's saying that about, you know, Camus the outsider, are they? Like, oh no, he wanted to kill his mum, I can't read it. It's insane.
No, I really thought you did an amazing job in making the reader, me especially, want to put my hands over my face and be like, no, just don't. But also at the same time, completely understand why, because you built up this, you know, this attractionist obsession in a way where the reader's just like separate from it and can see it's a car crash waiting to happen. But you completely buy into why. It also, you know, why aren't we blaming Arthur for most of this? Because he's the one making these promises and for a long time leading her down a path where he's not telling her what's going on in his life. So, no, I thought you did a great job. Plus, yeah. I'm totally with you on that. It's fiction. I'd rather read about people who are despicable. Not the saying that Hera is despicable, but reading about awful people is massively enjoyable. So yeah, I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, exactly. I recently read a book, I think it's called A Certain Hunger. It's about a female serial killer. That's wonderful. I mean, do I agree with serial killers? No. But do I want to read about them? Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, lots of people that read thrillers and, you know, novels about murderers. So I just think, yeah, I don't really see why you'd take such objection to it. Anyway, I wanted to ask about, I guess kind of a boring question, but I think sometimes practical questions are interesting to hear about. But on a practical note, like, how did you get it written? Like, you were working, how did you sit down every day? Did you write every day? Did you get up at 5 a.m. and write? What was your kind of process?
Sorry, I just had to laugh at the 5 a.m. That's hilarious. Absolutely not to that. So yeah, I was working 4 days a week at a bookshop as a bookseller. I was doing my PhD full time. The way that I got this done was because this little thing called COVID happened. There was lockdown and I was living by myself, and there are a lot of hours in the day when that's the case. I don't have children, or I didn't have children or a partner. So I had plenty of time. And essentially what I would do is when I got home from work, I would write for a few hours every night. And then it just words would just, you know, spill out, and sometimes they were good and sometimes they were terrible. And then the next day in the morning before I went to work, I'd read what I'd written. Delete the stuff that was shit, keep the stuff that I thought had some merit. But it was definitely not like a, you know, Anthony Trollope kind of continuously writing, finishes one novel, starts another. It was just, I would write when I could. And I'm a big fan of the adage, you know, write drunk, edit sober. So there are definitely a few lines involved in the writing of this book.
That's your big tip, is it? Get drunk and then have a go.
Yeah. Yeah, have a go. Yeah.
I wondered whether you could just give us a bit of insight or advice about how you feel your life as a debut novelist has been. So for any writer who's maybe about to go through the process of signing a contract and having their first book published, what would your advice be in the way to kind of cope with it all?
I mean, well, the first thing that I just hadn't foreseen is how long it takes between you signing a contract and the book coming out happening. So it was like, I think about 2 years between the period of when I signed and when it came out. So then there are 2 years in which you're still attempting to, I mean, hopefully writing another book, but life goes on. It's this huge little beautiful thing you have in your soul that no one else really knows about it. I'd say just enjoy that period, because that's a really nice period when you know you've done something and it's going to come to fruition, but, you know, no one's judged it yet. And I think in terms of, you know, when the book comes out, I mean, writers now are much more than ever assumed to be, to have views on everything. Mm-hmm. You know, people are always looking for sound bites on everything. And my advice would be, you just don't have to have an opinion on everything. Sometimes people ask me questions about, I don't know, things that are like very specific, like political circumstances. And I'm like, I'm not the expert here. You know, I have my views, but you should speak to someone who knows stuff, I think, because that can be a bit of a minefield. Yeah, so that's a good one. You don't have to answer everything. And then also just you have to take the bad with the good. So you'll get great reviews, hopefully, and then you'll get some that are really hurtful. and you just have to live with that and kind of let it roll over you. Not everything is going to be for everyone. And just, yeah, take it all with a sense of humor, because, I mean, it's wonderful that you get to put your work out there, and then it's for other people to make judgments, and that's okay. Just let that roll on.
You've alluded to Goodreads and reading your reviews. Do you read all your reviews, or have you managed to kind of step away from that now?
I think when it first was like up on Goodreads and I hadn't had any reviews at all yet, I would like read each new Goodreads review obsessively. Now that it's luckily had a few more and there've been like reviews by papers and stuff, I don't really read them unless my publicist emails me and says that it's a good one. Then it's safe.
Yeah, that I think that's a really healthy way to look at it. I was similar to you when my book came out, and that it had no Goodreads reviews, and then I read every single one, and then it got to a point where I read one that was really, like you say, hurtful, and I was like, okay, I'm done. Yeah. No more. And that was it, and I haven't
got exactly
since. So I think you do reach a point of saturation where I sort of feel like maybe this is just me, but I sort of felt like I know what everyone likes about this book now, and I know what everyone hates about it, and there's no other opinions, that's it, that I'm done.
Yeah, exactly. But then, I mean, like, so because I also write freelance journalism and, like, stuff like that, I have an email address that people can just email to do with that kind of work. And now that, not so much with the novel, but I've recently had a few, like, op-eds published in, like, The Times and The Observer. And that's been so fun, because people who will read an article and then like find the email address of the author and email them are a particular kind of person. And I've had some truly wild emails from British people that I've loved, usually older British men. One guy emailed me and he was like, this is a pretentious load of guff. And I just love that he used the word guff. So good.
Oh my goodness, yeah, you're right, it's a particular type of person. Well, I'm just gonna say now, Maddie, ignore all the bad reviews, it's 5 stars from me. Amazing.
Thank you.
So finally, can you give us maybe a tiny little tease about what might be next for you? What are you working on?
Yeah, so I am in the process now of adapting Green Dot into a television series.
Wow.
So I am writing the screenplay for that. Yeah, which is very exciting and new for me, new territory, as I've not written the screen before. So I'm kind of Googling how to write screenplay. And I'm also in the early stages of a new book, which, yeah, I don't want to say too much about because I'm not even that sure, but it's quite different. It's a love story that's more about friendship as the main love story. And it's told from a few different perspectives, which is really exciting because Paul is so deeply stuck in her own head. It's nice to have a few new besties involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, well, Maddie, I'm so thrilled you're writing something new. I'm really excited. And the TV show sounds like it could be amazing. I'm looking forward to hearing more about that.
Thank you
so much for joining the podcast today.
Thank you so much.
That was Madeline Gray talking about her literary novel, Green Dot, which is out now and available to buy. And if you'd like to support this podcast, debut authors and independent bookshops, you can now shop in the Confessions of a Debut Novelist bookshop, hosted by bookshop.org, which I've linked down below in the show notes. If you fancy buying any of the books you've heard on this podcast, then the majority of them can be found in this bookshop. And if you can, I would really appreciate you supporting me, supporting the authors and independent bookshops by buying them through this online store. Thank you so much for listening. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Or if you've subscribed already, it would be great if you could leave me a review. See you next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.